Welcome back to WordBalloon.com, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. It's time for part two, the wrap-up of my coverage of the FX Con in Orlando, Florida. In this episode, you'll hear from Gene Ha, the Eisner Award-winning artist who's working with Grant Morrison on The Authority from Wildstorm, and a few other high-profile projects. Mike Perkins tells us what he can about Captain America's post-Civil War plans and other projects in the works at Marvel. Chuck Dixon lays out his Wildstorm slate of books. Cover painter Mark Sparacio tells us about his cover work for The Overstreet Guide, Marvel's Heroes for Hire, The Comic Spikes Guide, and more upcoming work. Indie creators Derek Fish, Shannon Chenoweth, and Art Baltasar check in, and we wrap things up with two stars for one of my favorite shows on the Sci-Fi Channel, the hit series Eureka, with the father-daughter duo of Colin Ferguson and Jordan Henson. But we'll start things off with Gene Ha, who unfortunately tells us there's a few more delays on the way for The Authority. A quick conversation with Gene Ha on the convention floor, and Gene is currently doing some work for Wildstorm and doing The Authority with Grant Morrison.
Yeah, see, I'm finishing up the second issue of Authority, which obviously means it's going to be a little bit late.
Okay.
So this is a combination of my fault, slow artist, and a slow writer. I do have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that the script's going to be really late. So I won't have any work on the Authority for a month or two. So instead, they've offered me an issue of JLA with Brad Meltzer.
Oh, that's fantastic, man.
Yeah.
And yeah, you were telling me the other day that that's going to be an issue that it's a standalone issue, a single story, or?
I think it's related to the other issues. So,
sure.
They're planning ahead. I'm going to have a little bit of time to do it, so it should be able to come out on time.
Very cool.
And it's going to be with a new technique where I'm working with ink grayscales and pencils, kind of a Drew Struzan influence style, and see if I can try to get anything close to monthly with doing that type of style.
That's cool. I've loved the sketches that I've seen you giving out at this convention. And how would you describe that style?
It's a more precise version of that. Using at conventions, I generally just use markers.
Yes.
This one's using those same markers on a nicer paper, on an actual marker paper as opposed to Bristol. I combine that with pencils, inks, pit pens, paints. And it allows me to get a lot more control over line work and line value and stuff like that. Normally, you know, comic books has just a black line, so
sure.
I'm going to be working with gray lines. The whole thing gets then thrown into Photoshop, where I can make something that looks decently painterly. So.
And, well, just the wash effect that you seem to have for these convention sketches as well. I mean, people are really getting their money's worth, I think, with the sketches that I've seen you do. I mean, you did a gorgeous Batman this morning. I saw you doing a wonderful Miracle Man, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. You'll be able to see the first printed versions of this new style in a new Dr. Fate series coming out, the first issue.
Very cool.
And also inside of Dr. Blink Superhero Shrink from John Kovlich.
That's awesome. And I always ask you or Xander Cannon when I see you guys, because I am such a top 10 fan. And last time I saw you was you were winning the Eisner for the 49ers, which
yeah.
is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I understand you and Xander, it's in the works. It's not on the schedule yet.
Yeah.
But when you guys have time, you're slowly working on a new top 10 series.
Yeah. And I've got a few pages of pencils on it. And, you know, I love brilliant writers, but can't always depend on them for the fastest scripts. So I always have a second script on the side so I can always keep busy.
Is it going to be a miniseries? Is it going to be only six issues or four issues? Or?
I'll be doing four issues, and
okay.
then Xander may take it on, may do something after that with it, but it's all in his control after that. So.
Very cool.
But he's doing layouts for me, and it's I love his layouts.
Outstanding, man. Well, you're a beautiful illustrator, Gene, and we're always happy to see work from you, and look forward to that JLA issue and The Authority, and I know people are disappointed, but, it's always worth the wait, and that's the great thing about you and Grant, so look forward to the story. How long is that first Authority story going to be?
I'll be doing four issues of The Authority, and each artist is supposed to be doing a four-issue stretch on that. So
okay.
The first 12 issues will be three different artists then. I should also mention that The Authority actually does show up in the second issue.
And we look forward to the Brad Meltzer JLA issue as well. Gene, thanks a lot, man.
Hey, thank you, John.
I'm speaking to Derek Fish, the artist of Dandy and Company, and a book that he does with Mark Hammond, known as Tales to Amaze. Can you explain some of the concepts, Derek, behind your books?
Okay, well, Dandy and Company is an online comic. It's been running for over 5 years now. Runs Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it's best described as the slightly skewed misadventures of a dog and his boy. It's kind of a mix between the, like, everyday adventures of, say, of a Calvin and Hobbes and a Peanuts with the broader scope stories of the Carl Barks DuckTales type stuff. So it's a lot of high adventure and alien invaders and cute and fuzzy puppies. So it's a nice mix of cute with kind of crazy action and adventure. The other book that we're working on that John talked about with that I write with Mark Hammond is called Tales to Amaze. And that's the tale of what happens when the world's greatest superheroes vanish, leaving behind only their sidekick pets to save the day when their evil villains run amok. So that's, it's kind of a slight, somewhat parody, a bit more of a love letter to a lot of the big classic super pet, well, not so much the super pets, but the heroes themselves. All the characters in Tales really have analogous heroes that they kind of fit to. You can read it, and it's obvious, like, that's the Wolverine-type character, or that's the Captain America type. We have a Captain America-type dog. He's a German Shepherd named Fetch Fortune, the American man's best friend. And he's clearly our Captain America type, and we draw him in a kind of a Kirby style where he's always pointing at the camera and giant hands coming towards him. It's a lot of homage stuff there.
How many books are out right now for Tales to Amaze?
Tales to Amaze, the first issue's out, the second issue's on its way. Again, as for Dandy, I've got five 128-page black and white trades already collected from all the material there. I've been doing that for years.
Very cool, and I really enjoy you've got some sketches here of some mainstream heroes and great homages to a lot of Batman covers. It's great to see your versions and your takes on Detective 27, Batman 9, and Batman 1. Those are classic covers.
Thanks. It's really fun. One of the best things I love about doing conventions is that it's an opportunity to draw something other than talking dogs, which is the majority. And it's just one of those things where it just kind of fell into that between doing the strip and then I started working on Tales, and I'm drawing talking animals all the time. And every now and again, it's nice to draw something without a tail. And, you know, I come here and I get some commissions to do some cool Wolverine or Batman or Spider-Man or something like that, and kind of play around with the style. It'll try to balance the cartoony stuff with the action and really have a lot of fun with it.
This Thor in particular is also great, too. Here's, like, I can see the Stanley caption right there, "The Thunder God fails."
Something like that. I always wanted, I never finished that one, but yeah, he's supposed to, like, that moment the lightning strikes kind of thing, but yeah, that kind of the beaten down warrior thing. Yeah, that was a fun one to do, and I totally went straightforward style with that. No cartooniness is anything like that.
Tell me about the Chronicles of Aegeus, the Scarred World.
Scarred World, the Chronicles of Aegeus. It's a sci-fi fantasy book that I did. It's about as far away from Dandy as you could get stylistically. It's a fantasy adventure about a guy named Joshua Bloom who seems to live a perfectly normal life, except that he has all these nightmares. And in these nightmares, he's this really important person who has this weapon of great power called the Aegeus, and everyone is counting on him to save the world. And he keeps having these nightmares until one day he wakes up and he realizes that his nightmares are in fact the real world, and he's already lost. He lost so bad that his life was jump-started over again in our world, where he had to kind of relearn how to be a hero all over again to try and save the world a second time. So it's a kind of a little twisting reality kind of thing, but mostly the tale of the hero who messed up real bad the first time because he couldn't get his act together. So it's a much broader fantasy. It's four issues were complete, and it kind of leaves it hanging a little bit as the second arc of the story never picked up. So kind of like the first of the Lord of the Rings movies where you're like, Okay. Wow, great movie, and they're not even at the bad guy's place yet. So it's kind of got that vibe to it.
Where can we find your stuff online?
You can find pretty much everything through my main portal, which is dandyandcompany.com. That's spelled out A-N-D. Or the easier way is just derrickfish.com. D-E-R-R-I-C-K-F-I-S-H.
All right, Derek, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
I'm talking to Mike Perkins, who we had a nice lengthy conversation with regarding Desperado. But, of course, Mike does a lot of work for Marvel. And, unfortunately, a lot of that work he can't talk about because it involves Captain America, a pivotal character in Civil War. And there's a lot of changes coming up, but as always, I tell you, I enjoy the arcs that you work on, and the London Blitz was fantastic, and dovetailing into that great Union Jack story. Last time we spoke in the summer, it was just starting, and now it's wrapped up, and I thought it was a wonderful story.
Yeah, like we said in the summer, it was one of those, like, slam-bang, old-style kind of comics where loads of things were going on, and And it didn't take 2 minutes to read.
Yeah.
It took 50 minutes to read, because there's a lot of dialogue in there as well.
No question.
So I think Chris Gaines did a great job on that. It's unfortunate it was just 4 issues. I think maybe when they release a trade, we'll sell it. I mean, you sell, okay.
Yeah. I hope they collect it.
They've got intentions to collect it. What? That's pretty good. And I think maybe more people will pick it up from
that's
the collection.
Cool.
And I hope they do, because it's a great story.
Sure.
I really think that people were caught off guard by it, probably because of the Civil War stuff going on at the same time. I'm sure if we'd slapped a Civil War tie-in thing on there, we would have got another 50,000 readers or something. But I think it really worked well.
No question, and I hope the people that didn't read the issues do get a chance to discover it in the trade.
Yeah.
Because it's like Agents of Atlas too with Jeff
Parker.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. You know, Marvel has had some really good miniseries that have kind of maybe fallen under the radar because of Civil War.
Yeah, it's like Next Wave as well.
Yes,
it's fantastic.
Very much so.
You know, that should be selling. You know, in the 100,000s.
No question.
It's such a good book, but. I don't know, sometimes it just doesn't happen.
How many of the Civil War Cap books have you been...
I've done all of the Civil War tie-ins.
The casualties of War, that was all you. Okay.
Yeah, the 3 issues, 22 to 24. Steve has done all of 25 himself.
Okay. And that's the pivotal book that comes out moments after Civil War 7 as far as the time frame in the book.
Yeah, and last week I was drawing pages from 26. Because 26, we've kind of arranged it. I don't know if this is going to be going on for a few issues, but 26, we've arranged it so that Steve's doing half the issue and I'm doing half the issue.
Okay.
It just depends on which characters we're dealing with.
I see.
Like, I've been dealing with the Skull and Arnim Zola, which is great.
That's a great story.
Just a weird guy with a big face on his stomach. But, and with Sharon as well. And it's all... And the pages I've been drawing, just people are going to hate us. It's in a good way.
No, I look forward to... You know, that's the great thing. I think you guys and Ed have really crafted some really cool stories. I mean, it's real... I've always been a Cap fan.
Yeah.
But this series has really revitalized the characters.
Yeah.
It's given them a new purpose.
Oh, yeah.
The supporting characters have a new reason to be in there. And it's exciting as hell. And again, at the center of all of it is the Winter Soldier and having Bucky back.
Yeah.
And having... And, you know, did you do the special? The Winter Soldier special?
No, Lee Weeks did that one.
Okay.
I just got so much other stuff on.
Even the Casualties of War issue with the Winter Soldier and stuff and his interactions with Fury.
Yeah.
It's great to see this character, you know, thrown back into the Marvel Universe, but having a very vital role.
Yeah.
And also there's still that quality of the boy sidekick in him.
Yeah.
Even though now he's this adult with a new purpose and everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's really given us the flavor of who Bucky is, but again, with new purpose.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that Ed will go into the Winter Soldier stuff in Cap. But, you know, that's really a character that they're setting up so well that he could have his own book.
No question.
Because you could go into, you know, we've only briefly touched on his past, you know, where... During that time, you could go back. You could have little flashbacks about what was going on. And you could do that with that book. And I think, you know, that's something they should do. But, you know, I'm sure that Ed will be dealing with it in the Cap book as well. So.
Very cool. And you mentioned to me the other day that you and Chris might be working on something else in the future.
Yeah, that's a project with Bill Roseman. It's not coming out until later in the year. Probably November sometime, but we started working on it already.
Wonderful.
Again, they haven't announced it yet, I don't feel that I should announce it.
Not a problem, man.
But just to say that we're working together, and we're working on characters which are just, you know, as creators and as fanboys, it's nice to work on these characters.
That's excellent.
You know,
well, we always like your work, Mike, and keep it up, and look forward to it. And more stuff from Desperado, more stuff from Marvel. So thank you for your time, and we'll keep reading, man.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, you know, I have to say that there is one image that has been on the front page of Word Balloon almost as long as the Word Balloon logo, and that has been one of the covers for The Line, Shannon Chenoweth's book. And is it Shannon Chenoweth or Chenoweth? Okay. I'm sorry, Shan. I'm sorry it's taken so long. Unfortunately, we did a nice long interview, and it got eaten by my hard drive. But in good company, David McAleen got eaten as well, so... You know, the creator of Venom also got eaten. So as I had to do a second interview with David, I'm here to do a second interview with Shannon. And tell us about The Line, Shannon, for those of us who didn't hear that first interview that we did.
Well, the book's about a cop. She received a special gift, dates back to the Dark Ages. I like to compare it to Buffy meets NYPD Blue minus the vampires. It's about basically being given a new destiny or a gift, and you didn't ask for it, so your life is completely changed.
Nice cover, for a first cover from Mike Avon Oeming. That's really cool that Mike did that for you.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. That meant a lot, and it's great.
Mike's a good pal?
Oh, yeah, now he's a good friend. We became good friends, and, you know, he's just one of the, you know, one of the nicest guys in comics, and, I don't know, it's like, just one of those people that you just feel, you know, grateful that he's your friend. It was like, wow, you know, this guy's, but, yeah, I mean, he's great. There's so many pros in the industry that are just, they open right up to you, so, I mean, that's why anybody always asks me, oh, I don't know if I should talk to them. Like, drop them an email, man, you know, they'll talk to you.
Absolutely.
They're busy, but they'll get back to you. They're all just like regular people, just like you and me, and you know, they love talking to everybody.
For background on The Line, you did some ride-alongs on Police.
Oh yeah, I've done a number of ride-alongs, and obviously I've been a huge fan of Police and crime. I almost became a cop a couple times. I went to the academy, but decided against that. So along with writing the, you know, crime is sort of always, criminal justice has always been like my other thing that I've always loved.
What are some of your other media criminal influences?
I'm a huge fan of like crime noir. I also love watching it. I mean, simple from Cops to like The Shield.
Sure.
So anything that has like a police or crime element, I usually will check it out.
That's cool. Tell me about what's it?
Not a finger.
Thank you. All right, Not a Finger. Looks like Alicia Mack and Colin Mack are doing work with you on this book.
Yeah, this was an anthology that we put together. Colin did all the art, and it's awesome. It's a lot of work. He just did everything. He's got a story he wrote. Alicia wrote one or two stories, and I wrote a story. It's just kind of like a fun little thing that we did and put it together. And, anthos, we know, don't sell overly well. But, you know, it's fun, and, you know, people picked it up. Mostly people from, like, the Bendis board, people that we know. And it's, you know, something fun, and you know, I had a story that I wanted to put in somewhere, and I found the place.
The Line has its first two issues out. He's told me issue 3 is coming out later this year.
Oh yeah, the third issue will be out hopefully by the end of February.
Cool. Oh, that's great.
It's been a little bit of a struggle. Last year was a little bit tough for Eric, who's my artist, and I. We had a tough year, and then unfortunately our letterer had a big family emergency going on. So it's been like they always say, you know, it's a struggle. But, you know, we're working on getting it back on track. So I appreciate everyone following with us through that.
How long is the first story arc?
The first story arc is 4 issues long. Then actually Eric will be leaving the book because he wants to pursue other things. And he's gotten a lot of offers, which is awesome for him because he's an awesome artist. And I'm looking for actually new artists for issue 5. So if anyone out there is interested in working on The Line, drop me an email. Or come to MySpace or Comic Space. I'm everywhere, so if you can't find me, that's, I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, tell people about where they can find you. Like, give us your URL. It's misfits.com, is that right?
Well, it's misfits, .biz. Misfitcomics.biz is the website for the Misfit Comics, which is the imprint that I published the book under. My site is rangerchick.com, Ranger Chic, or thing, how you pronounce it. And also, like I said, I'm on Comic Space, which is comicspace.com, /Shannon, and I'm also on MySpace as well. I like to be a big presence online because, you know, I mean, networking online is one of the greatest things you can do, and I think it's awesome. You know, and Josh has done a great job on the Comic Space site, too.
Sure.
It's brand new. It's only been around for a few months. And
yeah, only a month.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I applaud him for it. It's great.
No, I agree. Okay, Eric Gravel and Shannon Chenoweth's The Line. It's here at the con, and you'll be at MegaCon in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah, MegaCon's 3 weeks. I will be there. Hopefully, I'll have issue 3 of The Line. If not, it'll be very quickly after.
Very cool. All right, Shannon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, John.
Speaking to Mark Sparacio. Mark, nice to see you, but very happy to see that you provided one of the covers for the convention program.
Yes, I did. It was the Mighty Avengers featuring Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, Spider-Woman, and Ms. Marvel. And it was a lot of fun. I had a great time doing it.
Very cool. I understand you're getting a lot more cover work from Comic Buyer's Guide as well.
Oh, yeah. Yes, a lot of work from Comic Buyer's Guide.
You studied under Will Eisner at SVA. That's really cool.
Yes, I did, John. I studied under Will for 3 years at the School of Visual Arts, And upon graduation, originally, I was supposed to work for Will.
For PS Magazine, or?
Actually, no. I was going to be coloring the Spirit reprints that were being put out by Kitchen Sink. And as fate would have it, I was contacted by United Artists to do a movie poster for them. So at the time, Will said, "Mark, I can't pay you advertising money. You got to do it." Now, he knew I was getting married right out of school, and he said, "You got to go for the advertising."
What movie was it?
It was a movie by Peter Greenaway called The Draftsman's Contract.
Okay.
And a lot of people probably have not ever heard about it, but it was a great movie. The movie actually was reviewed by Leonard Maltin, and he gave it three or three and a half stars.
Oh, that's cool.
It was a really cool movie.
Was anybody would know in it?
Anthony Higgins was the lead actor, but I don't think he's done very much here.
Okay.
It was also released way back in the mid-80s.
That's all right.
So, but it was a cool movie. It was a murder mystery.
Okay.
And it was cool. I probably said that about six times, so I apologize to the listening audience. But it was cool. Anyway, so I didn't work for Will after that, but we stayed in touch over the years, and we were friendly. And he was a great guy, Will. And I know the industry as a whole definitely lost a great man, not only as a creator, but as a person.
Oh, yeah.
When he passed away. And, I owe a great deal to him, as does this industry.
Sure.
So it's very, very sad.
We acknowledge your work on some of the programs and also for Comic Buyer's Guide. Sounds like you've got a lot of other covers for programs and things coming up, so talk about that.
Besides the Comics Buyer's Guide covers, which I've been lucky to do over the past year and get a lot of exposure from, I was able to do the cover for the Overstreet Price Guide being released this May 2007. So very excited about that. And they actually commissioned me to do the cover for the Overstreet Price Guide for 2008 as well. So I'm very excited. I did the cover to this year's FX show.
Okay. But by the way, the Overstreet 2007, that's the new Avengers?
Yes, that's correct. It's the new Avengers featuring Spider-Woman, Captain America, Luke Cage, Spider-Man, and Wolverine.
We talked off the air about Motor City coming up.
Oh, yes, Motor City. Billy Tucci and I are going to be doing the cover for the Motor City Con program. We did one last year. It was very successful. It was Batgirl and Catwoman. And this year we're doing a special tribute to Marty Nodell, who unfortunately also passed away recently. And we're doing a Golden Age Green Lantern. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're happy to do it. We're, flattered to do it. And, it's an honor because of Marty. Marty was a great guy as well. Another industry giant that we lost.
Yeah. So. And nice to see that Marty's fan recognition was able to come to him late in life, and he and his wife really appreciated that, and I think it came at a nice time, and I think he was able to kind of connect again with an audience he hadn't connected with in 40 years.
Yeah, Marty was a great guy. I met him only briefly once, unfortunately, but he was really, really nice. He looked at my work, and he was very, he was really just a great guy. You know, he spoke more about my work than he wanted to speak about the Green Lantern. So I was like really flattered again, and it was a pleasure to meet him. I wish I had spent some more time with him.
You and Billy have had a nice run on covers for Heroes for Hire?
Yes, it's been a lot of fun again. Heroes for Hire was my first Marvel work. It was Billy's first Marvel work also. And as of now, we've finished the cover to issue 8. So
we'll see what happens with that. I also noticed some work both on the covers and interiors for Liberty Girl for Heroic Publishing.
Yes, that's been a blast. Dennis Malinet, the publisher of Heroic, we met in San Diego last year, 2005. He approached me about doing interior pencil work, which I hadn't done in a very, very, very long time. And he was very gracious and understanding about me getting my legs back under for doing sequential work.
Sure.
Because my life before comics was in advertising for a very, very, very long time. But I had a great run in advertising, and I'm thrilled to be doing comic book work now. I'm almost finished with 3 issues of Liberty Girl. I'm doing the painted covers and interior pencils for Liberty Girl. They are computer coloring them, the interiors, I should say. And I'm really excited to announce that I've co-plotted issues 4 and 5, and a good friend of mine, Richard Martin, who also went to SVA and studied under Will Eisner, is scripting those issues. I'll be starting the pencils on them next week. Then we'll be doing issue 6 will be Dennis and I again. Issue 7 will be going back to Richard and I. And then we're doing a special 3-part mini-series for another heroic publishing character called The Huntsman. And it's going to be very much in the mold of James Bond and Master of Kung Fu, Paul Gillespie's Master of Kung Fu, I might add. And it's going to be a good action, good old-fashioned action-adventure comic. And, yeah, I'm very excited about that, too. Richard and I are doing that as well. It's going to be fun. So...
That's great. You know, if you come by, you really have to come by Mark's table and check out his stuff, because really wonderful, iconic renditions of your favorite characters, and hopefully soon Heroic will be able to join some of these guys as well. But, man, just great good girl art, really good Heroic poses and stuff, and it's all there for you. And you'll see him on the covers of conventions and Overstreet and comic book buyer's guides to come, so keep it up, Mark. You're doing great, and we appreciate it.
John, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I just hope the fans do come down. I appreciate their interest in my work as well, and thank you.
Patrick the Wolf Boy, that's the comic. Art Balthazar, that's the creator. And Art, I'm always happy to see you.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Doing fabulous. How's the show treating you so far?
Show's awesome. Meeting a lot of people, doing a lot of drawings, meeting a lot of kids, shaking a lot of hands, kissing lots of babies.
I'm a little disappointed you didn't show up with the Batman outfit like in Wizard Chicago last August.
I think in Philly I'm going to be Superman. I mean, you might see Kal-El and Jor-El in Wizard Philly. I'm not sure yet.
Very cool. Yeah, really. You need your man Friday here so you can have the duo.
Well, he's got a silver wig and a black outfit with the Superman ass. And I got the Elvis wig and a Superman costume. So.
Perfect. What's coming up, man? I mean, you always have a ton of stuff here and everything, but what's going on? What's the current stuff for you?
I just got an exclusive deal. Got something going with Devil's Due. They're going to do Volume 3 and Volume 4 of the trade for Patrick the Wolf Boy. I think it's coming out this month, January. Should be by, at least by February for Volume 3. And always doing Gorilla Grove stuff for Disney. And I got a graphic novel pretty soon. I think summertime it should be out. It's called Hot Alien Love Rocket. It's like Romeo and Juliet in space, but a lot of kissing. And then, I don't know what else I got. I got a big anthology book called Chocolate Milk Mix with the first appearance of Meteor Mike, who is going to take over the world pretty soon. And I got a lot of other artists guest appearing and doing all kinds of stuff. And then I'm throwing away my garbage at home and burping babies.
Well, you do that well as well, man.
Thank you, sir.
But, no, I always love your stuff, man. It's great humor stuff, and it's wonderful for children, and it's very funny, and... Whether it's the Grim Reaper, Lunar Lizard, Little Creeps, Patrick the Wolf Boy, versus Gorilla. You always make a splash at the shows, man, so congrats and keep it going. Art Balthazar, a pleasure as always.
Thank you, sir. I just got to say, oh, yeah, man. Right on.
You always become Cheech Marin whenever we talk, but that's good. I like that.
Oh, yeah, man.
I'm talking more with Chuck Dixon. We talked a little bit earlier with Derek about Connor Hawk, but there are so many other books that are out right now, and as always, I enjoyed the wrap-up with Claw, you and Andy Smith. That was really cool.
Yeah, we ended on a down note, but we hope to come back and rectify that. we're thinking the trade will sell well enough to do sequels. And we're pretty confident it will, because, you know, Conan does so well, we'll just sort of, you know, get in their tailwind.
First of all, Rush City, which is a really interesting thing of a combination of DC and Pontiac. And tell me about working on something like that.
Well, it was kind of neat. DC and Marvel were in the running to do the project. We won out. And originally it was going to be 3 separate one-shot comics. And then Pontiac said, well, couldn't you create one character who will coexist in the DCU with Batman and Superman? And DC was fine with it. So he exists in the DCU, which is interesting. And I was stunned at how hands-off Pontiac was.
Really?
Once they realized that we were capable... And we were gonna make the car look cool, but not make it look like an infomercial.
Right.
Which is what they wanted. They just wanted the car to be an aspect. And then they were the ones that suggested all the upgrades. I thought they would just want a standard floor model, but no, they wanted a James Bond car.
Very cool.
So, once we got everything approved and everybody agreed on everything, it was very simple to work on, beyond the story aspects. The biggest challenge for me was the idea that it would be seen by so many new readers, because the comic is given away at Pontiac
at dealerships.
Okay. Yeah, so a lot of casual readers who would never set foot in a comic shop are going to get to see this. So I tried to make as many of the stories as I could, one-shots. But it was a blast. I love writing car stuff.
That's cool. And you did one of the drive books as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did the ride. I did a lot. I probably wrote more of the ride than anybody.
Okay.
I've done at least 8 stories for that. I did a run on Racer X at NAL.
Yes, I remember that.
And I did Car Warriors for Epic.
Okay.
And then almost any character I've written that had a car, I've done car stories. I've done stories of the Batmobile. I've done stories of Black Beauty. So for some reason, I like writing about the cars.
Has Pontiac come up with a concept car for the that they're showing at the auto show or anything like that, or future auto shows that might reflect what you guys did?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they'd want a concept car with undermounted shotguns. But and I have yet to see us.
Consumers.
Well, yeah. There's a certain segment.
Thank you, Derek. That's right.
Yeah. There's a huge demand in the deep south and the inner city for this car.
I can see that.
Road rage option.
Road rage. Yeah. Jack-lighting deer. What's better than a car that's also a gun? But the I've yet to see a Solstice in real life. I've only seen one.
So okay.
I really should go by the dealership.
Let's talk Midnighter Grifter. All the grief that you seem to get on the internet about this. First of all, I don't get it, Chuck. I mean, honestly, it's interesting that people might think that you're incapable of writing a point of view that may not, coincide with your own point of view.
Yeah, well, I mean, I write the character as the character exists. I mean, I'm a gun owner, but when I write Batman, he's anti-gun, and I write compelling, convincing arguments for Batman and all the other Batman characters. I mean, I've written women, I've written aliens, I've written, including a gay character wasn't a problem for me. In fact, it was really interesting. Because anytime you write a character that's not you, you've got to think about that character, and how they would react. And, Midnighter really doesn't react any differently to the stimuli in the story. We've got alien invaders, and we've got Grifter trying to kill him. So, he's not going to, despite his sexual proclivities, he's going to act like Midnighter. So, but it's a Wildstorm book, so of course there's some references and some jokes and some of that. People that are ticked off at me writing it are probably going to be more ticked off when they read it. But this all got started because, I just felt that there was too much, sexual material being grafted onto superhero characters that are ostensibly, these are characters that have action figures and cartoons. We shouldn't be talking about heterosexuality, homosexuality, any kind of sexuality in any kind of detail. I mean, I got zeroed in on as a homophobe. Because I didn't have, I guess, the lockstep mentality I was supposed to have about the subject. And it's like, you can't talk about the subject. And what aggravates me is people go, basically they're saying I'm talking for homosexuals because they can't talk for themselves. And it's like, well, yeah, they can.
Sure they can.
Sure they can. And I've heard from, not in my defense. A lot of gay people post and say, look, I'm not offended. It's this guy's point of view.
Absolutely.
And he hasn't said anything against me, it's like I'm not about any kind of anti-gay policy or anything to that degree.
No.
And it's just my big mouth.
Do you like working in the Wildstorm universe?
Yeah.
You did a lot of work in the Wildstorm
universe. Well, yeah, it's a lot of, you get to, it's a lot of freedom because it's mature audiences.
Right.
And, people tend to forget that I've done a lot of mature audiences stuff before. I did Winter World and Black Terror and, before these guys were doing adult content, I was already doing it. And, I've been on, more mainstream licensed characters in recent years, so I haven't had, a chance to get into the blood and guts and four-letter word stuff for a long time. It's a lot of fun to get back to that. And it's kind of a Lethal Weapon crossover, two guys who hate each other but have to cooperate kind of story, and that's a blast.
You bet. Well, it's good to see you swearing again, man. That's all right.
Yeah,
I'm happy about that.
Yeah, you gotta swear. Stretch muscles.
Nightmare on Elm Street, and I always happy to hear about you doing a Hollywood book, so what's that been like?
That's been fun. When they got the New Line franchise, they asked me which of the three I'd like, so I got the first shot, and it was no question, it was Freddy. It's a little bit more cerebral, a little bit more complex. And I love the suspense element of the waking and sleeping aspect of, you know, am I awake? You know, dear God, let me not be asleep. You know, I mean, everybody can identify with that.
You bet.
You know, it's been a lot of fun. And I like working with Kevin West because he draws the real world and looks real, which is really important for a series because there has to be a contrast between what's real and what's not.
A dream, yeah.
Yeah. So
I saw the trade for Iron Ghost over at Desperado, and I enjoyed the issues when they came out. That was fun. It was kind of a throwback, kind of that Shadow, Doc Savage, kind of Pulp Era kind right. of story.
Yeah, I'm hoping it does well in trade because of the setting and, you know, Nazis. Nazis are a sale. So everybody loves to hate them.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And, again, another one that if the trade does well, Sergio and I want to come back and do a sequel to it.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. And like I always tell you, man, I want more Team Zero or something similar. I enjoy your World War II kind of stories.
Well, Butch Geist and I are working on a World War II set creator-owned project for Wildstorm.
Cool.
And it's a little bit of speculative fiction kind of thing, but it's all accurate. We've been researching like maniacs.
Cool.
So, and I've seen art from the first issue, and it's Butch. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely fantastic. So,
I'd like to see you actually get it shot, too, at some of the old DC World War II characters, if they'd ever be interested in anything new, like the Unknown Soldier or something like that.
Yeah, the only shot I ever had at them was I did on the anniversary of Battle of the Bulge, I did a Sergeant Rock 80 pager, which was fantastic. I had so much fun. Yeah, I'd go back to that in a heartbeat.
Any other of those characters you want to play?
Any of them. I mean, you know.
Losers, the original Losers.
Losers, Gunner and Sarge, Rock, Haunted Tank. I mean, I did, you know, I got to do a Haunted Tank story with Russ Heave. You know, I was like,
that's
okay,
cool.
Not
yeah.
enough. Give me another one. Let me keep on going, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I do that stuff. I mean, I like doing the superheroes, but I'm really attracted to the different genres, especially anything to do with history.
Well, and it reminds us, you know, that you're multifaceted, Chuck, and that's cool, and that's why I'm always excited. Like I told you guys earlier, I was happy to see you guys doing Connor Hawk, but I love your black and white stuff for Marvel all those years ago and everything, and I think you do all the other genres just as well, so keep it up.
All right. Thank you very much.
I'm speaking to Jordan Henson of Eureka, who plays Zoe Carter, and it was a wonderful first season, Jordan. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You guys had that break between the pilot and actual first season, right?
Right. We had an actual, I think it was about a year long that we had between the pilot and the actual series, which was a little crazy because I started off filming when I was 13. We did a pickup shot a year later when I was 14. It actually turned out well, though. I'd already cut my hair, though, so we had to get a wig that looked like my old hair. You know, the writers are amazing, and it's been an amazing experience.
And honestly, I'm not being nice. It was fun to see someone your age play a real person as opposed to the precocious kid and everything, and I think you did a great job of conveying a very adult and real, you know, character as opposed to, you know, a kid.
Right, thank you. No, yeah, it's definitely, there's a big sense of realism there, which is my favorite part about it, and I can't take full credit for it. You know, the rest of the cast, I mean, they make it so easy, you know, but it's such amazing work, and everyone in it is, I mean, the cast, it's an amazing ensemble, and so I've had an amazing experience. I have nothing to complain about right now.
The vets are great, and they're people that sci-fi fans are well aware of, Debbie Ferrantino and Joe Morton, and it's a nice combination of you newcomers and these old characters as well, or old character actors, and you guys are. You're a great ensemble. What's the word on season two? Is there? I mean, it's good that they're rerunning the show, and it sounded like you guys were getting good numbers. I spoke to Andrew over the summer during the season, and it seemed like things were going really well.
Yeah, the numbers, I mean, it's one of the, it's, I think, the highest-rated sci-fi show. I mean, it's so surreal, you know? You start off not knowing how it's going to be, and then it's just a hit, and it's amazing. It's a really great feeling. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just excited to see all the new stories we're going to have, what's going to happen in season two, what sort of arcs there's going to be. But, you know, we're, as far as that goes, we're kind of kept out of the loop just as much as everyone else.
So you're in limbo, unfortunately, and waiting for the call? Or?
No. It's second season, for sure.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
that's great.
I'm just saying with stories.
I see.
Yeah.
No, okay,
stories
good.
We were kind of kept out until, like,
well,
we
sure.
actually, you know, know. But I know that I might have a job, and I get, like, Cafe Diem or summer, which would be awesome, and I'm going to be driving.
Cool. Oh,
wow. So I think there's going to be a lot of maturing for my character, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, it's a great series. It's the sci-fi elements are fantastic, but the realism, I think, keeps it grounded and I think is giving you the opportunity, hopefully, to get an audience that may not normally go for a sci-fi show but appreciate the adventure and also the comedy in the show.
Right. I think that's also one of my favorite parts is that, I mean, it's anyone can watch it. It's such, I mean, there's quirkiness to it. There's also some darkness. I mean, there's still the sci-fi element, but altogether it's a good story and good characters, and it's a good show.
Was it easy finding a rhythm with Colin as far as the brother?
Yeah, oh, no. From the beginning, it was easy. I mean, we had such a great chemistry from the beginning that it made such good father-daughter relationship realism. But I don't know. Since the beginning, it was amazing.
That's cool. Well, it's a great show. Congratulations. I'm looking forward to season two, and I appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of Colin Ferguson, Jack Carter of Eureka, and I got to tell you, Colin, I saw the pilot the weekend of the weekend of San Diego at the San Diego convention. Got sucked in immediately, and I've enjoyed the season. It was great.
Awesome. That was a great venue to shoot it at, to air the pilot at. We've been shooting in Vancouver for about 5 months prior to going to Comic-Con, and 3 or 4 days before Comic-Con is when we wrapped all this stuff. So we've been shooting in a bubble. We didn't know if anyone was watching. We didn't know if it was working or anything. And we go from that to Comic-Con, where there's, how many people were in that audience?
Oh, my God.
It was crazy. Yeah, and really we aired the pilot, and so it was like, okay, it's working. I was so nervous.
That's cool.
And they say, like, yeah, just sit and watch. It's fun. It's like, is that fun?
Yeah.
You know, to watch people watch you.
I'm sure it was
terrifying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all I'm thinking of jokes that are coming and like, oh, is this going to work? Is it going to hit? Is it going to play? And yeah, enough of it did. So
I really appreciate it. And I spoke to Andrew earlier when the season was still in progress, how you guys were incorporating webisodes and also you doing the podcast commentaries and stuff. I thought that was a great idea.
Right.
And I think you guys really did a good job of kind of guerrilla marketing for this thing. And I think it reflected in the ratings as well. It also helped that it was a very entertaining show.
Yeah, I think the podcast thing was something that really important to me. I think it's also the audience. You could do that with an audience for Eureka. You know, if we were on a show like Desperate Housewives, I don't think I'd be pushing it that hard because I know that it's just not the same audience. So it's sort of fun with an audience as adept and as versatile as a sci-fi audience is. You can reach them in so many different ways, and you can sort of give them things in ways that you can't if you're doing a mainstream show. So it's really cool to be able to do that. It makes it more interactive for us.
How was it working with Jordan in the father-son dynamic? I asked her. She seemed to say it was very natural.
Oh, Jordan's a pain in the ass. From day... What? Huh?
How can you say that? That's good.
She's all right. No, it's actually been fantastic. The cast gets along amazingly. We run all our scenes before we get onto the stage. So as a group, we sort of come together on what the meaning of the scene is before a director or anyone else steps in. So as a cohesive unit, we then have a voice, which is a little stronger than one actor sort of saying, I have an idea, you know, which frequently gets swept under the rug. So I think that's created a lot of unity. Shooting in another country creates a little unity. No one knows anyone. You know, so in your spare time, you're hanging out with each other, and you're all making sure each other are okay, you know, because you know that you're in other countries.
It was a cool core of character actors as well that I think sci-fi fans would know, like Debbie Ferrantino, Joe Morton, Matt Frewer, and everything. And then it was nice being introduced to a lot of you, that it was the first experience that we had, seeing you on a weekly basis and everything. So it was kind of a neat mesh of, you know, like I said, recognizable faces and also new ones as well in this new environment, and eventually letting the characters kind of speak for themselves and rooting for the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you take people like Joe Morton and Matt Frewer, and they're just so good at what they're doing. I mean, Matt's nuts. He's like, he's so quick, and he's so, which I didn't know. I didn't have a sense that he could be a stand-up, and snap your fingers, he could be a stand-up. He's so fast. It's all just all the stuff that he does. And then you get Joe Morton, who's just a sort of the quintessential theater actor. So you get him bringing all that stuff to the table, and I think it's a lot. It's great. I mean, great for. I wish I was, you know, that age, Jordan's age, doing this, because there's so many people to pull from and learn from, and it's just great.
And I guess we could see a lot of your work on the Lifetime Network as well. Is this what I'm hearing? You're a big Lifetime vet as well.
Well, yeah, I've been here, and a bunch of people have been. You know, they say, oh, hey, I know you from something, and I sort of go, yeah, well, you know, it's Eureka. And they go, no. And we blow through the resume and ultimately end up on this Lifetime movie I did, which I can only assume is airing right now. because it's been a bunch of moms who are like, oh, mom at 16, you were Coach Bob. You know, and it was like, yeah, I was. So it's a funny thing to be recognized from, but it was a fun movie to shoot.
That's cool. Andrew has described you as the quarterback of Eureka, which is cool. And he said you've been great. You've been, like, up for anything, like, doing the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see the webisodes were, like, an old storyline that they were able to incorporate and use in a different way and kind of repurpose. Yeah. I don't even know if that was shot intended to be the webisodes from the start.
Oh, they were.
Okay, cool. Because Andrew had said that it might be a first episode and it just wasn't working as an episode, so then maybe they reworked the idea to be the webisodes that they became.
The idea was definitely something they were considering for an episode, but ultimately, it was exclusively only ever meant to be webisode stuff for people who tuned in, and it was really hard to do. It actually almost broke us.
Really?
It was rough. We'd shoot our normal 16-hour day, and then because it's a webisode, it's a different contract. So you then shoot a 16-hour day, and then you shoot 9 hours on a webisode. You get a couple hours sleep, and then you do another 16-hour day, and you're just sort of looking at the current contracts that the internet stuff has with the networks, and you're like, you know what, it's not about greedy, it's just about this has to be redone, because you can't function doing that.
Wow.
It snapped a lot of us. I mean, Fargo got it worse. He was Neil Grayson. He was the one who got 2 hours sleep two nights in a row.
Oh, my God.
He was a wreck. So, and you worry about him driving home. You know he's got an hour drive home, and he hasn't slept in 2 days. So that sort of safety, stuff like that you really want them to implement.
Well, I'm really glad that the show got picked up for a second season, and I know that you guys are still waiting on scripts, and you said you're going to start shooting in March?
Yeah, we start, I guess, March 7th.
Okay.
And we shoot through till beginning of July, and we should be at Comic-Con shortly after that.
Fantastic. Well, I hope to see you in San Diego, and regardless, you know, when the show gets started, I'm going to bug Andrew and everything, and hopefully I'll get you or Andrew and talk about season two.
Excellent. That'd be a lot of fun.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, John.
And that wraps up my coverage of the FX Con in Orlando. It was a wonderful time. My thanks to Mark Hammond and Mike Hertz, the guys who helped me and did so much and were very gracious hosts while I stayed there in Orlando. If you're down in the Florida area in January, I definitely recommend checking out the FX Con next year. It was a great time. I'm looking forward to the one coming up in 2008. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Sontras. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. Our MySpace page is myspace.com/wordballoon. We've also got our space at comicspace.com/wordballoon. There's our website, wordballoon.com, and our place at iTunes, where you can always leave a review or any type of positive comment. If you'd like to contact me, feel free. I'm available via email, john@wordballoon.com. And lots of great creators are coming up, so stick around. We've got more episodes on the way. Thanks a lot for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2007.